Okay.
If not, then we are going to continue on with what we've been talking about, which is this idea of switch capacitor converters, where we started on Wednesday looking at this 2-to-1 switch capacitor converter, maybe one of the more simple but useful implementations of switch cap converter, just kind of intuited the results based on what's happening here. We could say this is indeed a 2-to-1 switch cap converter. But then we wanted to start looking in more detail about the energy transfer mechanisms going on in this converter. And then I'm going to generalize to a couple of different cases that may come up in these types of converters. So we started first by looking at just capacitor charging from a voltage source. Real similar analysis to what we did very early in the year on COSS type losses. The difference being we're charging from an initial voltage V1 to a final voltage V2 rather than from zero to VDC. Okay. And where that becomes important is we know it's fixed when we look at COSS losses. If we charge from zero to VDC through voltage source and resistance or voltage source and switch, we're going to lose half the energy. It's going to be a 50% efficient charge transfer mechanism. We lose as much energy on the switch and resistor as we transfer the capacitor. When we analyzed going from V1 to V2, we found that's no longer the case, that there's a difference in the expression for the energy that goes into the cap. Here, 1/2 C V2 squared minus V1 squared, and the energy loss, which is 1/2 C delta V squared. So that if V2 and V1 are big numbers and not far away from each other, we can get this to be a highly efficient energy transfer mechanism, though never 100% unless V2 is equal to V1 and we don't actually transfer any energy, and it's 0/0. But it does look like we're not fixed at 50% loss. We looked at, on the next slide, the efficiency of this energy transfer. Looks like 1 minus delta V over 2 V2. So we've got a big V2 and a small delta V. This can be pretty efficient. Even though we're losing energy through this charge transfer mechanism, it doesn't have to be that much if we can constrain the ripple. Okay. And we'll today now apply what we learned here back to that 2-to-1 switch cap converter and analyze a little more detail of what the losses are due to this cap, we're going to call hard charging. Okay, but before we do that, just wanted to look at some other cases that are going to show up as we go to hybrid and resonant switch capacitor implementations. So we made it through at the end of class last time, charging from a current source, seeing what the energy losses are in the process of charging the capacitor over the same conditions. We still went from V1 to V2 over a time T sub C. We found that our energy losses associated with that charging look like what we had before, 1/2 C delta V squared times this scale factor in yellow here, 2RC over TC. And if we're using the same total charging time as before, our condition for all of this analysis to be valid was that T sub C is much greater than the time constant RC. So this should be a really small scale factor and this should be more efficient. We looked at this in general as just charging from a current source. Where this is going to be relevant more often is, well, there's a big inductance in the charging loop, right? It maintains more or less a constant current during this charging process. So we have a large filter type inductor in there. And then the last one I want to look at today, to round out these three, is resonant charging. It'll come up in resonant switch capacitor implementations. We'll analyze that one now. The circuit I'm going to sketch for it. It's going to be a voltage source, then a switch that closes and then opens back up. Closes at T is equal to zero, opens back up at T is equal to T sub C once the charging is finished. And then I'm going to charge through resonant inductor and then my same capacitor. C with a voltage VC. And I'm going to design this circuit in a way that I have my same common conditions on charging. capacitor voltage is going to go from V1 to V2 over a time T sub C.
This T sub C, I'm going to go from V1 to V2 over that time. And
to simplify analysis a little bit, the way I'm going to approach this is I'm going to assume there is no resistance, so we can apply state plane analysis. And then I'll go back afterwards and add in a resistance and assume the waveforms are pretty close to what they were before and calculate losses that way. So it'll be a little bit of an approximation there. Should be valid if the resistance is small. This is a high Q resonance.
Okay, so I have to figure out how this thing is designed so that I get from V1 to V2 over T sub C.
With the approximation that there's no resistance, then I can apply state plane analysis to this.
So my state plane M sub C versus J sub R. I'm going to have an initial condition of M1
voltage on the capacitor, just my normalized V1, and zero current in the inductor because the switch was open prior to T is equal to zero.
So my initial condition will be right here.
At T sub C, that switch is going to open again, so I want zero current in the inductor when the switch opens, and I want my capacitor voltage to be V2.
It means I want to get to here.
And so I intentionally didn't label my DC voltage source because we need to figure out what value that should be so that this is all going to work. And if I want to on my state plane resonate from here to here, I need the center of that resonance to be right in the middle.
Right? Put the center of the resonance, let's call it MX, right here. Then I can sketch a trajectory on the state plane that goes like this, constant radius.
We'll start at M1, bring around and end up at M2. So that means that my voltage source needs to be right in the middle of these two things. MX is M1 plus M2 over 2. Denormalized, my voltage source
is going to be VX, where VX V1 plus V2 over 2.
If I do that, I'll get this nice resonant trajectory. It gets me from V1 to V2. It's kind of a half sinusoid, and both current and voltage phase shifted.
So then my waveforms are going to look like going over this trajectory, M1 is going to be basically 0 dV/dt initially, and at the end. Means I'm going to be kind of this segment of a sinusoid. And then my inductor current, I sub L, I do that.
Half sinusoid, the peak value of that,
and solve off the state plane.
It's going to be the peak in J is MX minus M1, it's my radius, moving up to that as a peak current. As I denormalize, that's going to look like
VX minus V1 over R0.
And plugging in for Vx,
I'll have V1 over 2 minus V1.
That'll give me minus V1 over 2, and then my V2 over 2 assist.
It's going to look like V1 V2 minus V1 over 2 R0. So, what do I get? We saw previously, what's the change in energy in the capacitor? Well, that's, by design, the same thing. Goes from V1 to V2. I'm going to get 1/2 CV2 squared minus 1/2 CV1 squared. The energy at the end minus the energy at the start is my change in energy in the capacitor. I solve at the moment for the energy coming from Vx, what am I going to get? Or if I solve for the energy loss in the circuit, what do I get? The answer is zero. The moment I have no loss mechanisms in here. And by making this resonant, that switch open and closes at zero current. So I don't have this big pulse of current, this, oh, if we had zero resistance back here, if I close this switch, I'd have this impulse function of current that happens at the same time as my step, and I integrate those two, and I get some power loss, or calculate it this way. Here, because of that inductor, I no longer have that. As the switch opens and closes, I have zero current. And then once the switch is opened or closed, all I have left is a lossless LC circuit. So there are no losses in this as is. Okay. But to make it comparable, I'm going to now insert a resistance. Same thing would happen here. If you charge from a current source into a cap with no resistance, but no loss. So what I'm going to do is insert a resistance, R. I'm going to assume I sub L doesn't change when adding R. And that's, in general, not correct. So now it'll be, instead of just a pure sinusoid, it'll be a damped sinusoid, and that waveform will distort a little bit. Okay? If my Q is high enough, if R is small and L is big, it's going to be a pretty good approximation. And I'm going to solve losses, assuming I still have this same exact current wave shape, still a pure half sinusoid, but now it just goes through resistance. So then my energy loss in that resistor is integral from 0 to TC of IL squared RDT. It's just the integral of the instantaneous power loss on that resistor over this charging process. So that integral, I can then evaluate pretty simply because I know the RMS value of a sinusoid is peak over root 2. So this is just going to look like the time DC times the RMS squared times R. Okay. This would look like IL RMS over T sub C squared times R times T sub C. And that RMS for a sinusoid looks like I peak over root 2. As I square that, I'll get IL peak squared over 2 times R times T sub C. Okay. And let's keep going. So I'm going to plug in my expression for ILP. So I'll get V2 minus V1 over 2R0 from here squared times RT sub C over 2. And then
I'm going to manipulate this a little bit. And I'm going to pull in a couple of equations. First, T sub C.
What is T sub C?
C is the total charging time. And by the way, I've set this up that is a half of a resonant period between L and C.
Let's say this is 1 over 2 F naught.
1 over F naught is the resonant period, and half of that is half the full sinusoid. And F naught is omega naught over 2 pi, so I should change this to be pi over omega naught. I'm going to plug that I over omega naught in for TC. And then I'm going to pull one of these R naughts out and multiply it with omega naught.
The reason I'm going to do that is because R naught, omega naught is root L over C times 1 over root LC. It's going to give me
L's will cancel and I'll get root C squared in the denominator.
So it's going to give me 1 over C.
Let's do that. So we'll plug in T sub C, get pi over omega naught, and then I'm going to pull out one of these R naughts and multiply with that omega naught,
which will give me C in the numerator. Times V2 minus V1 squared over 4R0.
4R0, my 2 is still squared, my R0 is not because I pulled one of them over and multiplied the omega naught.
Okay, I'm going to take that equation now onto the next page to keep going. I have RC over 2 okay. What I'm going to do is just rewrite this. Take the R over 4R0. Over to the left here, and then what I'll have is that times 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared. Where
I missed the pi, didn't I? Apologize for that. So when I replaced T sub C here, I lost my pi in the numerator. That's just going to carry through since this whole thing's going to be multiplied by pi.
Pi here.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so what do we have? This is my energy loss in the voltage source case. And this, again, some scale factor.
I want the resonant charging to be better than my voltage source charging faster, then I hope that that thing is less than one. And may not be super intuitive what's going on with that R or R not actually translates into Q. We can analyze it that way to get it looking more or less like our previous results here, where we had this ratio of RC over T sub C. I'm going to kind of replace back through what I did here to get things back in terms of
T sub C and RC.
So what I've got is this R naught that I'd like to get rid of. The way that I'm going to get rid of that is by saying R naught is 1 over C times omega naught, bearing this and this. So let's just pull this term here, my scale factor, R times pi over 4 R naught equal to R times pi over 4 R naught is 1 over C omega naught. Look like RC pi over 4 times omega naught. And again, omega naught is related to my T sub C. So this expression is omega naught is pi over T sub C. I'll plug that in. I'll get pi over T sub C. This becomes pi squared over 4 times RC over T sub C. Same scale factor. If I wanted to write this all together, then I'd say my final result, R is I squared over 4 RC over T sub C 1 half C V2 minus V1 squared.
So that's my scale factor. Now, what can I say about this?
Well, from my voltage source case, I'm comparing charging the same voltages in the same time. T sub C should be much greater than RC. My condition for all of my analysis in the voltage source case would be true. So this thing should be small. Then this thing, pi squared over 4, is about a little more than 9 over 4 comes out to be about 2.5, is a little bit greater than what we had in the current source case, where we just had 2 times RC over T sub C.
But here, as long as T sub C was more than twice RC, current source charging more efficient than this voltage source with a series resistor. That probably needs to be true. Here it goes up a little bit. Now our factor is pi squared over 4, about 2.5. As long as my charging time is more than 2.5 times greater than my RC dynamics, this should be a more efficient expression. Both of those probably need to be true in order for the comparison to be valid. Comparing back to this voltage source case, T sub C needs to be much greater than RC for anything that we did here to work.
because all of our analysis is built on the assumption that, okay, this voltage gets all the way to V2, settles there. Probably 3 to 5 to 10 time constants for that to be a good approximation.
Okay. So just comparing these three ways that we've looked at now in terms of how efficient they're going to be. So in all cases, our capacitor is charged from V1 to V2 and time T sub C.
What was held common across all three of these cases.
If we look at charging with a voltage, charging with the current, and then resonant charging, in terms of energy loss, here we had 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared,
1/2 C delta VC squared.
And I'm going to name this for this table ECV, the energy lost in charging a cap with a voltage source. When we went to current, what we got is 2 RC over T sub C times that same energy. When we went to resonant, what we got is pi squared over 4 RC over T sub C times that same energy. These expressions are valid under a couple assumptions. So this voltage source expression was valid only if T sub C is much, much greater than RC, which is the time constant.
Charging. Then, as implications on our comparison here, it means these two are probably much more efficient, the voltage current source being a little bit more efficient than resonant charging. Because if T sub C is much greater than RC, these scale factors both become very small.
Current, we didn't really need any additional assumptions. Resonant, we had to assume we had a high Q resonance.
And that'll make our approximation valid where I solve the waveforms under the ideal zero resistance case and then just set I squared R as the loss. If it's low Q, that'll look significantly non-sinusoidal, kind of damp out over the course of 1/2 period. Okay, so do these results make sense? I would argue yes. Okay, so taking current as a baseline, for all of these, we're delivering the same amount of total charge to the capacitor. What's the best way we can deliver that same amount of charge, considering any resistive losses in between? Let's just give it whatever current it needs to have. Keep a constant current
I throughout the entire period.
That's going to be your theoretical minimum on losses on this series of resistor. In all cases, we're going to have the same average, but then depending on the wave shape of the current, we're going to have a different RMS going through the resistance. So to get that same average, having a constant current is going to give us the minimum losses on the resistor.
Resonant, we're going to have a little bit higher losses.
We're going to get the same total charge delivered, the same area under this curve, but we're going to have a higher peak. A higher peak is going to lead to higher RMS current, the same charge delivered.
Then, even worse,
voltage source case, we're going to peak way up and then decay down. It's even more than a higher peak for the same average, even higher RMS, higher losses.
So, those facts
are going to lead to kind of modifications to switch cap converters. Our original switch cap, we're going to go back to now. We just had this type of charge capacitor shorted between the input and the output and then shorted to the output. In all cases, it just looks like a voltage source charging a cap. There's some switches and resistances. We will be able to improve the losses in it slightly, particularly these fast charging losses, by going to kind of current loaded implementations and resonant implementations that require adding an inductor. It's going to help in terms of losses, but it hurts in terms of the motivation of looking at switch caps originally, which is that, well, caps can be real small, inductors are much bigger, inductors are harder to design. So there's a trade-off.
But with that in hand, let's go back and revisit this 2-to-1 switch cap that we started with.
And kind of intuited the idea that it's a 2-to-1, but now that we understand this voltage source charging, let's see if we can say a little bit more about what's going on in this thing. And the operation of it, switch these two devices on at the same time, then I shut them off and turn on D2, the second and fourth device. Going to split me into two subinterval equivalent circuits, all one and two. In one, my C fly is in series between the input and output, and two, directly in parallel with the output. And I'm still going to make my same assumptions. Assume T sub C is much, much greater than RC. So in each of these equivalent circuits, my capacitance has an exponential and arrives and steadies out at its final value. And then I'm going to assume that C is large enough so that the output is more or less constant. That C is very large. Output capacitance. C fly is a reasonable value. C, my output, approximated as infinite capacitance. It's just like a voltage source at the output.
Then what's going to happen? So if I look at VC fly, intervals 1 and 2. And it's going to go between two values. So in subinterval 2, based on my first assumption here, C fly is going to end up at the alpha volt by the end of the period and kind of steady there. End of subinterval 2, it's going to go to V, remain steady there. Coming back into subinterval 1, it'll be at V.
And through subinterval 1, by the end, it's going to get charged to VG minus V and steady out there.
Okay. And over the course of these periods, my assumptions on time constants, I'm going to have some exponential that goes and arrives at its final value. In our original analysis back here,
said, okay, V fly goes to V, V fly goes to VG minus V, but then assume, okay, there's no ripple on it, so these two are equivalent, it's the same thing, value at the end of subinterval 2 and the value at the end of subinterval 1. Solve those together, we got a conversion ratio of 1/2. The issue with that is now that we've looked at these losses, what we did is we said V fly is just a constant voltage over the entire period. When we look here, the energy transfer has to do with the ripple on the capacitor. We assume it's a constant voltage on the entire period with no ripple, then we haven't actually transferred any energy in this converter. That's zero output power. We have to be able to solve this thing actually operating, allow some amount of ripple on a C fly cap, because that's how we are transferring energy to output.
it's going, connecting in series with the input, charging up a little bit, then connecting in with the output. Since it's a little bit overcharged, it's going to transfer some charge through to the output, send power to the output. Okay, with that
in mind, this is now going to be quite simple to solve because we've already done all the hard work in our derivations of voltage source charging and capacitor. So in each of these intervals, it's going to look like C fly being charged through a voltage source from B to VG minus V, and then from VG minus V down to V. In both cases, my delta V is VG minus V minus V, VG minus 2V. My losses are going to be 1/2 C delta V squared.
So my energy loss sub interval 1, I'm going to have 1/2 C times delta V squared. In sub interval 1, I go from V to VG minus V. That's going to look like V minus VG minus V, or 2V minus VG squared. Subinterval 2, 1/2 C times the opposite direction, which would be VG minus 2V squared.
Because I'm squaring, this being negative, this doesn't matter. The negative is going to get lost as I square it out, so these are the same thing.
So my total E loss is just C times V minus 2V squared. I got both of those. All I'm doing is applying this expression that we found.
Total energy loss in this process, 1/2 C times delta V squared.
Okay, that's my energy loss, my power loss. I wanted to change this to P. It's just that energy times FS once per period.
C fly, thank you.
My notation's bad there.
Good point.
Okay, so that's my power loss. And
I'm also going to solve what is the input power. So in subinterval 2, my input current is 0.
I'm getting no energy in subinterval 2 coming from the input. In subinterval 1, IN is IC fly.
So my total input energy is going to be the integral of VG times the current coming out of it. In the subinterval, the integral of that current is going to be the total charge delivered to C fly.
So say my input power is VD times delta Q C fly 1 times FS.
Delta Q C fly 1 is the integral of this current over subinterval 1.
That's going to look like VG times C fly over subinterval 1. My delta V is VG minus 2V times FS.
Delta Q, C, delta V. I'm going to take these two equations, PN and P loss, on the next slide, and I'm going to stare at them really hard and see what I can come up with.
Okay. So P loss is equal to, let's say, CFS times BG minus 2V squared. N equal to VG CFS BG minus 2V.
These two things look like both expressions for powers. Power can be expressed as V squared over R when I've got a voltage on a resistor. And here I've got some voltage squared for my P loss times something. Over here I've got a voltage times a voltage times that same thing.
So just by matching up units, this thing here is multiplying V squared to get power, means it has units of 1 over resistance, with like a 1 over R, V squared over R. So I'm going to call this, and I'm still doing it, C fly. Sorry. I do it on the last slide. No, I got one. Okay.
Coulomb resistance is 1 over C fly FS.
And then what are these two equations telling me?
Okay, let's look at this one on the left, P loss. Telling me I have a loss. The difference between these two voltages squared over REQ.
So it's describing something that looks like REQ, then I have VG minus 2V across it.
That'll generate the same amount of power loss. My input power looks like VG times some current, which is this same delta V over R. Delta V is VG minus 2V over REQ. That's the current that's going through this resistor. The input power is that current times the input. I can indeed put just my input here. VG.
This current is VG minus 2V over R, this segment. The power is that times the input source.
And all I have in this thing is 2V, which is the output voltage as seen through a 2-to-1 DC transformer. So I'm going to
modify this, and I'm going to put in a 2-to-1 DC transformer, this bar indicating DC transformer. The output is V, the input is 2V.
Then at the input, I have is VG in series with this equivalent resistance.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to push that resistance through to the output and call it R0.
By pushing it through this 2-to-1 transformer, it's going to get divided by 4.
So my R0 is 1 over 4 C fly FS. And that'll leave me with just the input source over here. Okay. So, what's the difference now, having gone through this? Started out,
we had, just by intuiting things, we said this is a 2-to-1. Look like, okay, it's got a 2-to-1 transformer in there. So go through and actually look at the energy transfer mechanisms. What we get is that it's not purely a 2-to-1 transformer, but it has some equivalent output resistance. And this equivalent output resistance is a result of this charge transfer mechanism between the caps. it's going to look like 1/4 C φFS. It's inversely proportional to the capacitance and switching frequency.
I'd like this R out to be small and close to my ideal case for high efficiency, right?
This models some equivalent losses. It's not a real physical resistor. It's a model of what's going on when I lose energy in these hard charging of the capacitor transitions. But it is modeling the real power loss. The loss on that resistor is modeling the real loss of the circuit. This is a large value. The circuit's going to be very inefficient.
So for high efficiency, once small R naught, make small R naught, it means large C fly, okay, no problem, and large FS.
Perhaps a little bit odd, we're here. Increasing switching frequency would actually make this thing more efficient, given the losses that we've modeled so far. Okay, so I haven't looked anything at the COSS capacitance or overlap losses, any of the switching losses that we looked at extensively in the course yet. I'm just looking at the cap-to-cap energy transfer efficiency. That often enough is the dominant loss mechanism in this. And then I want to go faster and faster, switch faster to reduce that. What's the limit on that? To start switching faster and faster, eventually my assumption that made all of this derivation possible is not going to hold. So I need each subinterval, each switching subinterval, to be much greater than time constant of the circuit. If I have the same resistances, same capacitances, and I switch faster and faster, eventually this is no longer going to hold true, and all of this analysis will no longer be relevant to what's going on in the circuit.
That's C fly.
Did I miss one again? Or are you just asking as I translate to this?
It was going to be the slide.
Yeah, so it was just general C before here, it would be C fly. So capital C is just gone. I just replace it with the voltage source based on my assumption.
So any C that I'm talking about, this thing just becomes a voltage source V. Oh, and I'm over time.
Okay. So, one last comment. This is also where my previous comments about regulation come from. Okay, because there's this resistance here, I can't actually alter the output voltage. I do things like switch slower, I'll make this resistance bigger, and then for a given load, the output voltage will drop. By changing around switching frequency, I have some limited ability to change the output voltage, but the only way I do that is by putting a bigger resistor in series and generating more power loss. I don't really want to do that if I want high efficiency. I want this to always be as small as possible. This is very small, then it is just a fixed 2-to-1. Some cases, maybe I need some instantaneous to drop the voltage, switch a lot slower, cause a lot more loss. That's going to prevent something from blowing up. Maybe it's worth it. It's not something you want to rely on for regulating basic transients.
Okay, so we'll pick up there on Wednesday. Talk about other implementations. Stop by at any point to pick up your modulation boards and stop by the first floor to pick up your PCBs and components as soon as they're in. I know at least some of them are in. I haven't heard that all of them are definitely in. Okay. Thanks, guys.